This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Michael K. Show.
This was a dream come true. You're talking about the New York Giants, and I understand the challenges with that, and it's just a great opportunity that was afforded to me and my family. We look forward to it.
But if you're going
to
read into these press conferences, I got the sense from Joe Shane that they plan on being competitive right away. And I got the sense from Brian, he's making no commitments whatsoever because he wants to look at this roster, he wants to look at film, so I didn't get any kind of commitment, and that's fine. He should tell us how he feels. I didn't get any commitment that there is any pressure to go out there and win a bunch of games in 2022 from Brian.
The Michael K. Show.
This is going great. My four-year-old fell asleep.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Well, we'll wake that little one up right now because Daddy is doing another interview. And the new head coach of the New York Giants, Brian Daboll, is our guest here on the Michael K. Show. Coach, it's Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg, and we thank you for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. How's everybody doing?
Everybody's doing great. I just want to start off with a simple question. I've heard your last name pronounced Daboll or Daboll. What is the right pronunciation?
Daboll, like a table?
Yes.
Or you just call me Daves if you want. It's up to you guys.
I like Daves. That makes me seem like I'm close with you. I like that. I would assume you take over a job like this, and it's something that you've worked your whole life for, but it must be an extraordinary amount of work. Is it just like an avalanche right now, Coach?
Yeah, that's a good word for it. I've been here. I got here on Saturday. And really from Saturday until now, we've been grinding away. So it doesn't seem like there's enough hours in the day. But just thankful to be here. And, it's an exciting time for me, my family. But there's not enough hours in the day.
How long does it take, Brian, to get familiar and comfortable enough with this roster to feel like what you have to work with?
But it'll take some time. I don't want to rush anything, and I know this. Everybody worries about hiring a staff as quickly as you can. I think you really have to do your due diligence and take your time in interviews, and then once you get the guys on the staff that you feel comfortable with, and then you sit down together and you evaluate the players on the roster, and you talk to Joe and this scouting staff about what you're looking for, and I think you can only do one thing at a time. That's what I'm trying to tell myself on a daily basis. You got 48 thoughts in your head, and you just got to take it, 1 minute at a time right now, and not to get too far ahead of yourself.
Now, Brian, this just seems like it's a quarterback's league, and so many Giant fans are wondering, and you spoke about the fact that he was there Saturday during the snowstorm. What are your thoughts on Daniel Jones? Can you turn Daniel Jones into the quarterback the Giants thought he was when they picked him with the sixth pick?
Yeah, I don't want to make any, predictions with where we're going to go with him. I just think he's a guy that, from what I hear, he's a grinder. Obviously, he was here. It's important to him. He has some intelligence, some size, some strength. I want to get to know him first and foremost, develop a relationship, and then, kind of go from there.
I'm sure you weren't that dialed in, obviously, because you were dealing with the Bills, but it wasn't so easy here for Joe Judge at the end. I'll just be honest with you. On this show and everywhere, the criticism that existed for him down the stretch there with some of the things he said about Ron Rivera and then the two QB sneaks, which I'm sure you've heard about, it can be pretty rough in this town. Do you have any thoughts or concerns about just dealing with the media market that New York is when it comes to these football teams?
Yeah, I'm going to try to be real the best I can. Take ownership when things aren't going well. Point it at me. I mean, look, there'll be plenty of people pointing it at me when things don't go right. I understand that. But, I got to really do a good job of trying to stay in the moment, focusing on improving our football team, hiring the right people, developing relationships. Those other things, as you get older in this league, you acquire some tough skin and you're going to need that here. I understand that. Heck, I'd be giving it to me or somebody else as well if I was, a fan base that didn't win many games in the last 5 years.
One of the biggest pitfalls, Coach, is making that adjustment to focused on one area of the team and now be in charge of everything. With all the former head coaches you've worked for, what's the best advice you've gotten for making that adjustment?
Yeah, take it day by day. Don't let things, you know, get too far in front of you. Just do a good job of managing the people that you're working with and developing clear standards, expectations, and, you know, do the best job you can. There's going to be, you know, 5-6 things every day on your desk that you weren't prepared for. It feels like more in these first couple of days, but, you know, just be yourself and lead the group the way you know how to lead them.
You know, we have on Robert Saleh every Monday during the football season, Coach. And, you know, one
sure.
thing he said when he wrapped up the season, he said the most difficult thing being a coordinator and then becoming a head coach is that you don't get to do the things that you love to do. You don't get to see as much film and break down the stuff that you like to and the thing that got you to this point. He said there's so much administrative stuff and things like that. Is that something you worry about? Because you were such an outstanding offensive coordinator that it will take away from the thing that you did best that got you this job?
You know, I think the important thing is putting together a good staff. Am I talking to Michael K., Don, or Peter?
This is Michael.
Michael. Okay, yeah. I mean, put together a good staff and let your guys do the work. You know, I don't want to micromanage, or I want to let guys do their job and do it to the best of their ability and do a good job around the building and talking with people and taking care of my responsibilities. But, look, whatever I need to do to help our team win, whatever it may be, that's what you're going to get out of me, you know, regardless of what it is.
And it sounds like that unless Patrick Graham gets a job as head coach, he is going to be your defensive coordinator. Is that something you wanted from the beginning, or is that just an organizational decision that they wanted to see him come back?
No, I've known Pat for quite some time. I worked with him at New England, had a lot of respect for him, his family, but also have a lot of respect for him, more importantly, for the job that he's done and him as a defensive football coach.
I don't know if you want to answer this, if you will, but when you got the job, Coach, did the front office or the ownership say, listen, we really, really would like to make it work with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley? These are two people that we like, that we like the way they represent the organization. We would like to make it work with them. Were you given that guidance when you interviewed for the job?
Yeah, no, we had conversations really about everything, the players, the support staff, you know, vision, philosophy. And, you know, I'll keep those, you know, private in those conversations. But, look, I'm excited to work with both of those guys, you know, Saquon and Daniel. I feel they both have some talent. It's going to be our job to try to pull it from them. And, again, you know, look, Daniel's going on, what, his third system?
Yeah.
Or his fourth play call or whatever it may be. It's you guys know. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. To play quarterback in this league, it's hard. And different guys take different paths. Obviously, the guy that I was able to coach these last 4 years, we were together for 4 years. So, you know, year two, you can draw on year one experiences. Year three, then you got 2 years to draw. Year four, you got three. We'll just take it day by day with Daniel and the same thing with Saquon and try to help them improve.
Coach, will you, like this year, you know, Daniel got hurt and the Giants didn't really have an experienced backup behind him. Is that something that you would like to bring in somebody that has some pelts as a quarterback? And would you make it a competition in camp?
Yeah, I what I won't do is get to camp, and I appreciate the question. What I will do is wait until we get our coordinator in and hire the rest of the coaches, and then after we sit down and evaluate. Look, it's always good to have a backup quarterback that has some experience. There's no question about that, but you know, we'll get to that down the road here soon.
And, again, you haven't gotten a chance to see everybody to really be able to evaluate the talent that's here. But the one thing that was pretty much known, Brian, is just the lack of protection that Daniel had. And this offensive line has some work to do. Is there a general philosophy on how to address correcting problems on the offensive line?
Yeah, well, we got to take a look at the players, and then we got to make sure that we're properly instructing those guys. But, again, you know, I've had this question a few times, you know, throughout my career when you're an offensive coordinator. And, you know, those five guys got to see it as one. And it's not just the offensive line and protections at times. Maybe from the outside you're looking at it, but maybe it's a receiver. Maybe it could be a back in protection or a quarterback holding onto the ball. I think we got to do a good job of just looking at the entirety of the offense and seeing where we can improve, which is, you know, at this point, a lot of places.
You know, I heard your press conference today, and you mentioned how, you know, your first job with Belichick, you got $15,000. And I always wonder about this, and since you're on the phone with me, how do you live on that?
It's hard. it's hard. You eat a lot of cereal at the office.
I bet. Goodness. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go, please.
No, it's just, you know, that's you know, that was 20 years ago or whatever it is, 21 years ago, 22 years ago. And, you know, it's not easy living on something like that, but you're doing what you love and you're giving everything you got. And, you know, you make the most of it.
Have you gotten a phone call from Saban or Belichick since you got the job?
Not since I've gotten texts, you know, plenty of them, and responded back to a lot of people. And again, I owe a lot to, you know, a lot of those mentors that I had, you know, those two in particular.
Now, your general manager said in his press conference on Wednesday, compete today, build for tomorrow. And when you see what Cincinnati has done, 6 wins their last 2 years, now they're going to the Super Bowl. Many teams have been able to turn things around. With what limited knowledge you have of this team, can you expect to go in and be competitive right away? Is that your plan, to have this team with that extra playoff spot competing and playing meaningful games in December?
Shoot, I'm not We got so much work to do before we get to that point where we're at. We're going to try to compete every day. We're going to try to build a foundation, build our culture, unite the people in the building, build relationships. You know, we're going to try to do all those things this first year, improve our roster, make sure the right people are in the building, you know, try to do it in a first-class way. But in terms of where we're at, you know, look, I got a lot of appreciation for what Cincinnati has done just as a coach from afar, and some other teams have done that. You know, right now I'm just – again, focused on trying to get this staff together and building it the right way.
Now, obviously, being a head coach is the pinnacle, and that's what you want to do. You go from offensive coordinator, but was it tough, Brian, to say goodbye to that? I mean, you built a monster offense in Buffalo and a great young quarterback. Was that a tough one to leave?
Yeah, look, I loved my time there, and I loved the players and the assistant coaches I had an opportunity to work with every day, but you know, we were ready for the next opportunity, and fortunately they offered me the job, and, you know, my family and I were excited. I wish those guys the best. Obviously, there's a lot of relationships that I had there that, you know, of course, you build these relationships and you're with these guys every single day that, you know, those relationships don't go away, but we were excited to get here and start a new chapter.
Now, before you start that new chapter, I just have to, a second, look back at the last one. You were just involved in one of the most epic football games of all time. So take us back to you being part of the Buffalo Bills a couple of weeks ago. What did you learn from that game, and where do you rank it just in all-time experiences, good or bad, in football?
Well, I'd say losing sucks. You try to win in everything you do. But, again, these games, particularly at this time of year, you know, that was my 30th playoff game that I was involved in. And, you know, there's a variety. You remember, that was my 7th loss that I was part of. So you remember the losses a heck of a lot more than you remember the wins. But, again, all those games, you know, that's what it comes down to, executing under pressure in big moments. You know, the 5 Super Bowls that I was fortunate to be part of, every one of them ended on the last play. And the national championship that I was part of ended on the last play in an overtime. So that's what those games, you know, you got teams that are really good teams that make it to that point of the year, which will be a goal of ours, obviously, is to play meaningful games in December, January, and February. But you're going against the best of the best, and you got to be on point in everything you do. One play makes a huge difference.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, when you look at your resume, you did spend some time with the Jets, and you got a chance to work with Brett Favre and Chad Pennington when you worked under, you know, Eric Mangini. I can't think of two. Just dealing with Chad Pennington, he was one of the smartest players I ever met. He wasn't that much younger than you at the time. I mean, did you learn anything from those two quarterbacks in particular, Chad Pennington and Brett Favre, when you were with the Jets?
Oh, yeah. Look, I'm still friends with those guys to this day, very good friends. Those were two guys that reached out right away amongst a lot of other guys that I've coached. Chad was, you guys know Chad, cerebral, intelligent, exceptional, with intelligence. It's always good to talk to those quarterbacks that are standing behind center and try to see it the way they see it. I think that's important for a play caller, because you want to give them the things that they're really good at and they feel comfortable with. But I learned things from all the guys that I've coached, those two in particular. But being around really good players, I think if you're open-minded and you don't have a big ego, I think you learn a lot from your players, particularly the guys that, that are touching the ball on every play.
Brian, I don't know how or why, but, Rex Ryan doesn't like many people. He was raving about you today. He loves you. So what's your relationship with Rex?
I never worked with Rex. I worked with his brother. I've known Rex for some time.
Loves you.
I appreciate that from Rex. I didn't know that. So
now, one bit of advice before we let you go. Robert Sala also has six children like you.
Hmm.
And his first year as a Jet coach, his house wasn't ready, and they lived in a two-bedroom apartment. You got to get a bigger place just to give yourself some room to breathe.
Yeah, let me tell you what. If that's the case, then they'll just wait in Buffalo for a while until we get another one.
There you go.
That's right.
Smart
that's
coach.
The move.
That's the kind of smart decision-making I like from a leader.
Well, Coach, we thank you for coming on. We really do wish you the best of luck. We hope it goes great, and obviously Giant fans are rooting for you as well. So thank you so much for carving out time. I know you're crazy busy, and we do appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Look forward to meeting you guys and building a relationship, and, anytime.
All right, thank you
Thanks,
so much.
Cheers. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Brian.
Be well.
Take care.
That's Brian Daboll, like table. That's the best way to remember it. I think he comes off great. I think he does. And, boy, can you imagine what he has on his plate? And he has to hire a staff. He has to really look at all the film of all the players and really get to know everybody. I mean, there's some heavy lifting here. This is a team that's coming off a stretch of really bad football.
And I'm like you, Michael. I think it's a positive that he doesn't want to get anything hung on him, making any kind of bold predictions. Because how could he? How much knowledge can he have? What was it, 8 days ago, he lost one of the most heartbreaking games that any team has ever lost in the postseason. And now you fast forward a little over a week later, he's introduced as head coach of the Giants. And really, any prediction he would make about being competitive would just be out of the clear blue sky.
And it would be on the back page of all the papers.
Right. Now, and I just think Joe was a little more assertive. But then Joe probably, eyeballing this job, studied the roster and probably had a lot more working knowledge of the Giants as a whole personnel-wise when he took the job than Brian could have. The Bills were already built when he was the assistant general manager there. Daboll was putting together a game plan to try to win and go to the championship game and didn't know he wasn't going to do it till late last Sunday. So I like it. I like his personality. He seems like he's got the right demeanor for this. I didn't get any, Peter, like that coach speak, those the phrases that get thrown out there generically, like these are well-thought-out responses, and very much like I felt about Robert Sala this year. That would be one heck of a reality show if they lived together.
Oh, yes.
And their 12 kids combined to be like cheaper
now
by the
talking.
Dozen.
I'm predicting Sala has a seventh. That's I'm going out there. I'm predicting he has a seventh.
It sounds to me, I think, listening to the press conference, Brian's got, a kid in college, and he just has a four-year-old.
Yes.
So I think his six range were Robert's around the same age, but I think these kids are younger, and I think they're probably, as we speak, maybe working on another one.
Oh, as we speak?
Yeah.
Right now.
Right at
Holy
this
crap.
Second, yes.
A lot of people do that as they're listening to the show.
I'll tell you this, apparently. Personality-wise, he was almost right between Judge and Sala.
Yeah, because he threw in some football speak.
He's got some football speak, and he's clearly a football guy. And he wasn't as – quite as sort of cerebral and superhuman as Saleh is. He was right in the middle, though. He was plenty human and plenty football guy and could still laugh a bit. You know, he still did the regular football thing of like, this is one of the things I'll never understand about football, right? Why? I almost knew it would happen. But why, when I ask him about the Bills game, can they never talk about things like that in a human way where, like, they acknowledge what it was? It's almost like they want to erase it. Like, they're here now and the past didn't happen. It was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but, I mean, he did bring up a good point. All these big games he's ever been in have been the last play. So I guess he's used to it.
I know, but that was – hey, we've all watched last play football games before. Don, that was a different kind of game.
Well, you're never going to forget that game.
That's and, a forever football
and
it, game.
And it's also a game, and I wouldn't bring this up to him, that you could walk away from and feeling some level of satisfaction.
Oh,
that
you,
it wasn't
he did
on
what
you.
He had to do.
Right.
You did your job.
Right. Yeah, he can't walk away from there saying, I wish I had done this differently. They scored on every possession. Maybe the four punts during the game, but once they got to those final 2 minutes, you couldn't do a better job coaching it. You're an offensive coordinator of a team that was an offensive machine. It was a defensive problem, not an offensive problem.
Yeah, I was caught there for a moment, a real conundrum, because, I mean, I want to be in the inner circle. I want to call him Dave's, but you know I'm diametrically opposed to nicknames. But I want to call him Dave.
No, but he said you could.
I know, but I don't like nicknames.
But it's not really up to you.
But I used
when
to call
somebody
Yogi
says
Bear Lawrence.
You can call him
I mean,
that.
That's what I did. I called Bucky Dent Russell. I mean, that's
no,
what
you
I
didn't.
Do.
You really didn't.
No, I did. I never call Aaron Boone Booney, ever. I call
him
Aaron.
Well, no, that's silly. But when a guy's name is Buck,
I call
now,
him
now
William.
Now you're being that guy.
I call him William Nathaniel.
And Yogi never said Yogi.
Lawrence Peter.
That's insulting.
That's not true. He's lying about that one.
I know.
I'm not.
I would hope he's lying.
I was being pulled in to call him Dave's, but you know I'm an anti-nickname guy.
Or you would have called him Dave's.
Oh, I love it to walk into his office. Hey, Dave's, what's up?
Love it. That's so funny. I was looking on his Wikipedia page, and they didn't list his personal life. So I thought maybe he wasn't married with kids. Yeah, not so
no,
much.
He's married the exact
with a lot
opposite.
Of kids. Yeah,
the exact,
with a lot of kids.
It's dude, the football world. They live in their own world in football that has nothing to do with societal norms. None. Like, people now are having kids later and later in life. People are not having six kids. You go to the football room, I feel like these guys feel left out at 21 if they don't have two kids.
I feel silly. Maybe Michael will agree that one of the reasons Michael and I got the late start was we were so focused on our careers. Like, doing this stupid thing. Those guys are coaching. And they still found time to have kids. Like, that would be the one job where you're like, let me just get established first. Let me make some money. And then we'll have the kids, you know, later on once I've won my first Super Bowl, you know?
But, so his son's in college. So he probably had that kid making $15,000 a year.
Yeah.
Which means you're taking home $8,000.
I think he said I think he's got a son in college. So say the kid's
20.
He's 20 years old. So. Dable's 46, going to be 47. So say he was like, you know, 27 years old. So at 27 years old, he was in New England as a wide receivers coach.
15K.
How much money could he even make?
He said 15,000.
Well, I think by the time he got elevated to, he was a defensive assistant in 2000 and 2001. That's probably when he was making chump change. When they made him the wide receivers coach, I'm sure that came at least close to six figures.
Get your bag.
Right?
If you read the book that Wickersham wrote about the Patriots, these guys do all the grunt work, and they make nothing. And because they want to make it in the business, they suck it up and they do it. They make nothing.
The Nick job,
when Jeff Van Gundy like just started, he's living in his car.
Yeah. But here's my prediction, and if I knew him well enough, we'd have him back on. I'd ask him about this. I believe that when he was named wide receivers coach of the Patriots in 2002, he went blockbuster and chill. He rented a movie, went home, told his wife, guess what? I just got wide receiver coach. Let's have a baby.
So each job, it was a new kid.
Well, because I think – What do you think? What do you think a wide receiver's? I bet a wide receiver's coach should make in 2000. Probably made 100,000.
Maybe.
But all right. So let's say he went from 15,000 to 75,000.
It's a big bump.
That's yeah. So we're so comfortable talking about people's lives.
So we're right all in his pocket and in his
In his Brian, pocket if, again.
If Brian wanted to do his due diligence. I wonder what these guys are talking about after the interview.
Oh, they're listening.
That's what we're talking
about. You know, Hanlon is monitoring this right now, what we're talking about.
Well, Hanlon already knows what this Brian was getting into. He listens. He knows. I probably had him properly prepared for it.
1-800-919-3776. There's one thing that happened. There's been so much going on. Supposedly, reportedly, allegedly, the greatest of all time retired over the weekend. We haven't even spoken about it. But we will, and we'll take your phone calls as well, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.